The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Thursday, October 27th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for show number 801. We're glad to be here joining you from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. Also joining us from our virtual studios in Grastoria, Oregon, is our news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Virtual Cannabis Carrie.
That's right. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm getting like that Simone character from the Al Pacino movie.
There we go. Are you getting ready for Halloween this weekend?
Oh, come on, Russ. Is this the first time you met me?
That's true.
I'm not a huge fan of Halloween. I have been eyeing all that candy, though.
Oh, yeah.
Getting ready to eat some of that.
So there's no costume parties or anything like that you got to head off to?
You know what? I've been invited to costume parties tonight. I think you go into a party. I got an invite to that. Tomorrow night, Saturday night, and then Sunday night every year, my boyfriend's band has a big Hellorium Halloween party, which is a big costume party. You know, Megan Dabbs made the cutest Rasta-colored ballerina costume.
Adorable. Oh, really? Rasta ballerina. I like that.
Yeah, tutu. A Rasta-colored tutu. That's great.
I'm going to be reprising my Tim the Enchanter costume.
Ah, nice choice.
I think I'll be talked into wearing it for Monday's show, too, because Herb Thrasher, he's coming to do the show tomorrow night, the rock show, and he says, are we painting our faces for the show? So I guess we're going to have to costume up. So enjoy that all this weekend on Halloween for your Normal Show Live and Normal Network shows. Now, Carrie brings us the headlines right after the first break. And what do we got in the news today?
I do. Today, I have to say, two stories that I'm reporting on today, I had a little bit of difficulty with, and I have to send some thanks out to Wiz Calico for helping me frame them a little bit. They're really not stories about marijuana per se, but they are stories about prohibition. So I'll be bringing you those two stories. First up, though, I want to bring you the story of the first medical marijuana license that was issued in the nation yesterday. Very exciting. And then I'm going to end up with a story about a Canadian group of professionals that is working to legalize marijuana in Canada.
All right. Looking forward to that. Let's get it legalized in the Great White North, eh? For today's Daily Toker Tunes, it's Groovin' Thursday, actually. And John Doe Radio will be bringing us some music. And I think we're going to be listening to some Wiz Khalifa today. So that'll be fun to check out. At half past today is our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. We do this on the even Thursdays, the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. So in Cops Say Legalized Drugs, we're going to speak to James Gearock, who is a former Cook County prosecutor in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago. So he'll have plenty of wisdom to impart on us on the drug war. And then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. The Ron Paul fans have kind of raised my ire. You wanted me to talk about Ron Paul on the show? Okay, we're going to talk about Ron Paul on the show. Stay tuned. It's Normal Show Live.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that gives us these precious rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search or seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
You are listening to PodSafe Music.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month. And when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of Normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply all the sacred smoke.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
With the thousands of medical marijuana dispensaries in our country, most of them had to get some kind of business license to operate a storefront. It has been an issue at the local level with many towns and municipalities, particularly in the states of California and Colorado, handing out general business licenses, some getting agricultural licenses and others getting tax ID numbers under such things as health services, food service, or the general personal services listing. Last night in Denver, though, the first meeting of the medical marijuana work group met last night, and the very first state medical marijuana business license was awarded to Dr. J's owner, Tom Sterlocki, at the meeting. He owns a Denver dispensary that has been working for more than a year on the application process. The idea for the working sessions with regulators and dispensary owners came from Denver's Director of Excise and Licensing, Tom Downey. Along with handing out the first historic license, those attending the meeting got an update on a proposal from the Denver City Council that would allow dispensaries to transfer their licenses to the more appropriate medical marijuana state license, an idea that they are moving forward with. The state issued 11 more licenses to businesses in Fort Collins, Littleton, Colorado Springs, Boulder, and a few additional licenses in Denver from the State Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division, a group that works within the Colorado Department of Revenue. Another 7 dispensaries have received letters to let them know that they are likely to receive a license soon. The state has sent out an additional 467 letters to local governments for that additional 467 dispensaries and marijuana product manufacturers to make sure that those businesses have local approval. That is the last step in this state licensing process. The presentation of the first medical marijuana business license was met with a standing ovation. New license holder Stalaki said of the historic event, quote, "Now we're not standing alone with the feds. We have the city and the state standing with us." Colorado fought long and hard within and outside the marijuana community to pass the most comprehensive regulation for medical cannabis in the nation, and they are hoping that all their rules and regulations will keep the federal government from raiding legitimate businesses in their state. The next medical marijuana work group meeting is scheduled for December 14th. For those seeking a license, they can attend and ask questions of the regulators.
All right. We got more marijuana regulation happening here. And of course, the money's flowing in here. Denver and Colorado in general have been moving forward with this to a much greater extent than any of the other medical marijuana states. So it's no surprise that we get the first official state medical marijuana license happening in Colorado. And my question to the people, in the federal government and those who oppose medical marijuana is, why would you be opposed to this? Why would you be against us having better regulations, regulating this industry, bringing in tax revenues, creating jobs, and getting medicine to sick people? It just always amazes me that people would prefer the chaos of backyard grows and and parking lot deals and cartels getting involved in crime, that they would prefer the status quo that we have now to moving forward with legitimate legislation. I just don't understand it.
And a crime story that we're reporting on because it involves a marijuana growing operation. Baker County, Florida authorities raided a mobile home yesterday where they found a large marijuana cultivation grow setup. 29-year-old Troy Howell was charged with the cultivation of marijuana, but he was also charged with aggravated child abuse and kidnapping. Also in the trailer, his 18-year-old nephew was found chained in a room. The chain was to keep him from escaping and telling authorities about the growing operation. The chain went from the trailer axle under the floorboards and up around his neck. The young man also showed other signs of abuse, such as bruising on his neck, head, shoulders, and back. He had a bell to chime when he needed to use the restroom or if he was hungry. Authorities raided the grow when Howell's 13-year-old niece, who was also living in the home, told Baker County Middle School authorities about her situation in the house. There was also a 15-year-old nephew living in the trailer as well. It is unclear if the victim and the other teens were siblings or cousins. Authorities showed up at the trailer around 4 p.m. when the girl was due home from school yesterday. Inside, they found over 100 marijuana plants and 15 pounds of marijuana processed and ready to be sold by the pound. Investigators are still looking into how Howell became the guardian of those teens. Florida DCF took custody of all three teens.
So we don't know how those teenagers got to be in this man's custody, but it wasn't through like foster care or anything like that. Did you?
We don't know at that time. And even if they find that out, they might not release that due to privacy issues.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, folks, this isn't a marijuana story. This is a story about a sick child abuser is what it is, a sick criminal child abuser. And he would have been doing any crime he could do to make money, not have a legit job where people might keep a better eye on him. And whatever that crime might have been, he might have chained his 18-year-old nephew in the room to prevent him from reporting that crime as well. Whatever it might have been, it might have been cooking meth. They might have been running stolen computers. Who knows what they might have been doing? But the fact is that since marijuana is criminal, and since its criminal prohibition boosts its profit margin so high, that's the crime he decided to get involved with. The least amount of effort and the least amount of risk, at least as far as other sorts of criminal activities might go, because people who buy marijuana tend to want to buy marijuana, and they don't seem to worry about it being a stolen good that they might want to report to police. So by keeping marijuana prohibition intact, we provide an easy source of revenue for scumbag criminals like this who would chain up a young man and hold him hostage like some sort of slave here. This is just yet another reason why we want to legalize marijuana. Why give criminals something easy to be in control of, something easy for them to be able to make a profit off of? Let's put that back in the hands of legitimate businessmen, people who follow the laws, and then scumbags like this guy will bust them for whatever they end up doing in the future. But let's not try to blame marijuana for what's going on here.
And in a second sad prohibition story, this is out of Texas this time. A trucker who lives in Missouri was stopped by a Texas state trooper yesterday. But before the trooper could find the marijuana that was hidden in the sleeper cab of his truck, the man decided to end his own life instead. Mason Burks was driving his tractor trailer rig on U.S. 59 near Lufkin, Texas, Wednesday morning when a state trooper stopped him for a commercial inspection. As Trooper Mike McLean stepped up to the truck window to speak with Mr. Burks, he heard a gunshot. As the trooper took cover and called for backup, several officers stepped up to the truck window to find that the 46-year-old with a clean record from Springfield was dead of a gunshot wound to the chest. After removing the body, they did find 603 pounds of marijuana in his sleeper cab.
Yeah, another death because of marijuana prohibition, not because of marijuana itself. Guy's got a clean record. He's working as a trucker. Probably doesn't make a ton of money. You know, probably hurting in this economy like a lot of people are. We don't know his financial situation, but, you know, probably desperate if he's going to be getting involved with being the shipper of, you know, a 600-pound, you know, felony shipment like that through Texas, was it?
Through
the state of Texas.
Central
Texas. Yes, very dangerous place to be with 600 pounds of marijuana. So, you know, once again, you know, another death because of this prohibition. And and another situation where this guy could have found a job in the marijuana industry. If marijuana were legal, we might have a job for him instead of him having to, you know, take on this illegal trafficking in contraband. It's just a shame, and no more people should have to die in the name of this prohibition on marijuana. It's just let's end this now and give people some hope in this world.
A Canadian group of professionals has formed a coalition that calls on the legalization and the regulated sales of marijuana in Canada. The group, made up of BC police officers, health professionals, legal experts, and academics, includes members such as former BC Supreme Court Justice Ross Lander and BC's former chief coroner, Vince Kane. And it isn't just retired professionals that are joining in. One of the spokesmen for the group is David Bratzer, a current Victorian police officer who is also running for the Victoria School Board this fall. The group is pooling their expertise and their finances to launch a high-profile campaign to, quote, end the cannabis cash cow of organized crime. One of the board members of the group, Dr. Evan Wood of the British Columbia Center for Excellence in HIV and AIDS, said that marijuana prohibition has fueled gang warfare, saying that Canadian school kids have easier access to marijuana than cigarettes or alcohol. He says where a regulated market should exist, there is now an extremely violent, unregulated market controlled by organized crime. He also said, quote, what we've seen in government-funded surveillance system is that the price of cannabis continues to go down and the potency of cannabis continues to go up, unquote. He said he wants to regulate the sale of marijuana in a similar manner to cigarettes so it can be controlled, taxed, and eventually the use reduced. Former Justice Lander said that his 34 years on the bench taught him that prohibition is futile. Lander's also told CBC News that prohibition obviously isn't working throughout North America, saying that marijuana is impossible to extinguish. The group also released the results of an Angus Reid poll that they had commissioned. The poll suggested that only 13% of British Columbians support keeping the current marijuana laws unchanged. That poll was recently conducted with a sample of 800 British Columbians and a margin of error plus or minus 3.5%.
Yeah, this is a great Angus Reid poll. I'm taking a look at it right now. It was just released today. And the question was, do you support or oppose keeping existing marijuana laws unchanged? 3% strongly support the laws the way they are. 10% moderately support the laws the way they are. And the rest of it is moderate oppose, strongly oppose, or not sure. Strongly oppose is 51%. 51% strongly oppose the British Columbia or the Canadian drug laws, the prohibition, the way they are. That's a majority that strongly oppose, and another 28% that moderately oppose. Another question on here that was very interesting that says, agreement with, and do they agree with this statement? Chasing and arresting marijuana producers and sellers is ineffective. We would be better off taxing and regulating the adult use of marijuana. How many British Columbians agreed with that? 45% strongly agreed and 24% moderately agreed, for a total of 69% that agree we ought to tax and regulate the adult use of marijuana in Canada to provide a better policy than what we're doing right now. Only, what is it here, 24% disagreed that it was ineffective to chase down marijuana users and sellers. Also, another question, did they agree with this statement? The possession of a marijuana cigarette should not lead to a criminal record. Strongly agree, or should lead to a criminal, excuse me, should lead to a criminal record. Only 20% of British Columbians believed that it should lead to a criminal record if you're caught with a marijuana cigarette. Disagreement, strong disagreement, 59%. 18% moderately disagree. So again, 67%, 2 out of 3 British Columbians believe that marijuana should not lead to a criminal record. And another question here about the mandatory minimum sentences for marijuana-related crime. This is something Stephen Harper is trying to do up there in Canada, is to institute U.S.-style mandatory minimums that have made us the greatest jailer in the world. So here's, do you support or oppose instituting strict mandatory minimum prison sentences for marijuana-related crime, including possession of 6 or more marijuana plants? Should there be a mandatory minimum sentence for that? There is only 39% support, 21% strong, 18% moderate, while there was 56% opposition to mandatory minimum sentence for grows over 6 plants. And finally, the possession of a marijuana cigarette should affect a person's ability to find and maintain employment. How many British Columbians agreed that getting caught with pot ought to make it tougher for you to get a job, only 23%, less than a quarter, believe that your use of marijuana should affect your ability to get a job. A strong disagree, 51%. A majority of British Columbians strongly disagree that your use of marijuana should impact your job prospects. 21% moderately disagree, for 72% who think marijuana should not affect your job. That's the Angus Reid poll. We'll have a post on that at stash.normal.org. Check that out. Now it's time for a break. Having trouble with all these buttons in the studio today. We'll get them all figured out. We'll be right back with some Daily Toker tunes. It's Groovin' Thursday.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Warning from Hippie. When toking in the woods, watch out for park rangers. Hold it right there, mister.
Okay, class, repeat after me. Am I free to go, officer? I don't consent to any searches, officer. I wish to speak to my attorney before answering any questions, officer. These three phrases may help your attorney keep your ass out of a jail cell someday. So memorize them and use them. Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back. I was looking for a download from John Doe Radio today. Did not find one with an intro, so we're going to go back to the archives here for this next tune. Big favorite of ours here at the show, this next artist, Wiz Khalifa, gotten to be very, very popular out there in the mainstream as well. This is Still Blazing.
You wanna make a weed song? So here go a weed song. Usually I make a weed song. So here go a weed song.
Still blazing, still blazing, still blazing. Why can't everyone just smoke like me? Just give me a quiet place and let me roll my weed. Well, ain't nobody in my business, don't nobody gotta know. Let all your conscience just go and blow it by the O. I'm here, but my mind's gone.
And it's getting hard to see you cause my eyes low. Marijuana minutes, nigga time slow. On the kush clock, it's always time to smoke. Say I look high, I say I'm high, bro. Still blazing, no I'm with me, just facing. I remember days when I could only smoke on occasions. I couldn't wait to go on cop from Ray and them. Rolling blunts of 50, stuck in my mom's basement. Had drove for sale, but niggas was smoking haze then. Blew a O a day then. Don't know, but somehow I made a way. And nigga, them bills need pay, but I'm
fool.
Believe that. Big ounces of kush, nigga. Yeah. And they go wherever we go. Yeah.
Why can't everyone just smoke like me? Just get up out my face and let me roll my weed. Well, ain't nobody in my business, don't nobody gotta know. Let's all learn how to roll and blow it by the O. I'm here, but my mind's gone.
400 a zip, nigga, that's what I'm on. And I'm gon' re-up as soon as the fire's gone. Smoking OG Kush from another time zone. As the smoke begins to pile on, wetting rags and putting bags over the fire alarm. You niggas styrofoam, lightweight. I'm on my 13th OZ, quite baked. You probably go to sleep, your throat might ache. You off that good weed, you need a nice break. Ciaro J's up all day and you won't have to put an eighth in. They saying it's amazing how I'm
That's Wiz Khalifa with Still Blazing on your Daily Toka Tunes for Groovin' Thursday. I'm getting word from the chat room that John Doe is sick today, so that might explain why we didn't get a song. Got a bonus here for you. We're going to go to video from the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup and George Clinton. Cup in Detroit. When we come back, we're going to have our interview segment with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Cops see legalized drugs. James Gerak, next.
Want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
All right, guys, here we go. We've got the top six answers on the board. Name something that gets passed around. Chris.
A joint.
A joint.
This is Normal Show Live, where a joint is always the right answer.
Now, Chris, I don't know what 100 people you thought we were talking to at some nice little mall across good old America, but I'm pretty sure the people didn't tell the survey people, hey, an illegal drug. Let's turn around and see how many weed heads are out there with Chris. A joint!
Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the show. James Gearock, a former Cook County prosecutor and a current speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. James, welcome back to the show.
Rush, good to be with you.
All right. And, you know, in talking to the various members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition that we've spoken to over, you know, many months here on the show, it's always good to have you here because your voices lend an extra air of credibility to this subject. And I'm just wondering, as a prosecutor and as you were fighting this drug war on that side of it, what caused you to realize that we needed to have a change in our laws?
Well, it was the violence that prohibition foments. We just have so many kids dropping out of school, joining a gang, getting a gun, shooting each other, fighting over who's going to control a particular set of drug turf because once you prohibit drugs, it becomes the most valuable commodity on the face of the earth. And then each addict, of course, is a crime wave. So we have so much crime caused not really by the drug, but because of prohibition, that it was the violence that really attracted me to a change in drug policy.
Mm. I think a lot of people are coming around to this notion as well. It's interesting. We kind of have a schizophrenic public on this issue because when we ask them in polls whether or not they think the drug war is working, they tend to say no in large numbers. But then when we ask them, well, should we, you know, change our drug laws? Should we make drugs legal? They also tend to say no in large numbers. So it's kind of like we hate what we're doing, but we're afraid to change what we're doing. How do we break past that?
Well, the people have been so indoctrinated with this, just say no, and let's get tough and crack down and build more prisons, show them who's boss, take back our streets, down with dope, up with hope, and all this sloganisming, that it's hard for people to think. And the reason that we finally have their attention is because not only does the war on drugs not work, it's the most effective way to put more drugs of every type, uncontrolled and unregulated, everywhere. So they can see that it doesn't work by the seizures of drugs by the ton, and it makes no difference in the availability of the drug. But they can also see that really the war on drugs is the heart of nearly any crisis they're complaining about. The problems with guns and gangs and crime and prisons and the cost of those things. So the taxes and then the deficits. We can't pay our bills and health care with people in the drug trade with bullet holes in them who are uninsured because you don't get insurance when you're in that business. We've got trade imbalance. We fund terrorism. So we corrupt the kids. We corrupt the police. We've got the bad guys and the good guys on the same side of the line of scrimmage in this drug war, both in favor of the drug war because the good guys are getting fed by the drug war with jobs and contracts and prison building and advertising money for TV and radio. Just as the cartels and the street gangs are getting fed by prohibition that makes something that grows on a plant the most valuable commodity on the face of the earth. Yeah. So the people are coming to their own realization that the snake oil that the politicians have been selling, prohibition, is really the culprit and not the solution.
Very well put. Now, as we move forward and try to make a change in what our drug laws are, I think there's a lot of people that kind of realize, all right, we need to do something. We need to legalize in some sort of way. But they may be afraid of what we've experienced with the other legal substances we have, alcohol and tobacco. In the case of tobacco, they may be afraid that there's going to be big companies like R.J. Reynolds, Philip Morris, that would take over marijuana and want to, you know, market it to kids to build that market up, you know, much like they did with Joe Camel and those sorts of things. Or in the case of alcohol, where it's so ubiquitous and celebrated in our culture, you know, the Coors Lights ad, and you'll be sexy if you drink, that they're afraid marijuana might be marketed in that sort of way to their kids as well. How could we move forward with legalization and still address those kind of fears?
Well, I think that people need to listen to the people who were involved actually in this war on drugs for the last 40 years. I'm one of them. I'm absolutely opposed to drug use, and I'm absolutely opposed to the war on drugs. When I was a prosecutor in Cook County, Chicago, in the early 70s, the best heroin you could get was 2% pure. After 40 years of drug war, you can now get 90% pure heroin. So pure, you don't need to use a needle. We've got seizures of marijuana 2 miles from my home in suburban Cook County, 6,000 plants with a Mexican drug cartel coming in and planting the things and setting up cots and PVC piping to get the water to the plants. We have a seizure last December of 11 tons. A month ago, a seizure of about 6 tons. And then the adjoining county, DuPage County, a seizure of 2 tons of marijuana. So the people can see that what we're doing is causing what we're trying to prevent. It's putting more drugs everywhere. And when you prohibit something, the irony is you give up the right to control and regulate it. Mm-hmm. And even if Philip Morris were in the marijuana business, at least the government would be in control of regulating and compelling the issuance of warnings and labels on the drugs. And people would know that they're getting the same drug or same type of marijuana, same strain, same strength, or at least within some range, just as when they go buy a can of beer. They know that this beer is not going to be 5 times as strong as the beer that they had the prior week because they don't know who made it, where it was manufactured, who's selling it. We can have rules and regulations about where marijuana, for example, would be sold, requiring licensing, a fixed place of business. You got to be of a certain age to buy it. Mm-hmm. So the people need to come to the realization that control and regulation is better than prohibition of something that people want and are using.
All right. We're speaking with James Gearock from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a former Cook County prosecutor. And that addresses one side of it, you know, the fact that we have the control over the purity and the potency and all of that. But again, I think that marketing angle might frighten some people with the idea of the Budweiser frogs and the scantily clad girls selling pot on, you know, magazines
and
such.
Advertising should be banned. There's, in my opinion, there should be no advertising of any of these substances.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're putting anti-drug advertising on TV and paying the radio and television and newspapers and magazines $400 million a year to put anti-drug advertising on. And people need to realize when you put an anti-drug ad on, it's first and foremost a drug ad.
Exactly. Well, there's a very famous neuroscientist named George Lakoff who says, don't think of an elephant. You know, the minute you say something, you're actually bringing that up in people's minds.
Sure. I mean, we created a glue-sniffing epidemic. Nobody ever heard of it, and some kids accidentally come across the problem when they're building an airplane in a room that's too small, and the toluene that's in airplane glue, the kids got dizzy and lightheaded, and they end up in the emergency room. A couple of newspaper reporters get hold of it. They write a story. They interview the emergency room people. They interview the neurologist. This can destroy their brain, and it's terrible for the nervous system. It really
sure
is. But the attention that was generated by those couple of articles within 2 years had turned glue sniffing into a national epidemic where before it was unheard of, but now they had city councils passing ordinances to put the glue up behind the counter. You can't buy it without your parent. The same kind of thing we're doing with Sudafed now.
Mm-hmm.
So we created the epidemic by the exposure we gave to the thing we were trying to prohibit.
Is that now, would that be similar to what happened in the mid-80s when I was growing up? I remember crack being, you know, the president coming up with a bag of crack on TV saying, this is the new Coke. It's so potent. It's so, it'll get you so high.
Well, I guarantee you that did not help.
Yeah.
the advertising does not help. But the other problem with crack cocaine is the most efficient means to get a drug to the brain is through inhaling it. And so, I mean, if somebody's a smoker of tobacco and they don't smoke for, you know, a few hours and then they take a drag on a cigarette, that first puff, I mean, it'll hit their brain like a cement truck, and they'll even feel woozy until their body can try and accommodate and get them back to some semblance of normality with the nicotine in their body. Mm-hmm. So the part of the crack problem was the means of ingestion. It's really the same as powdered cocaine chemically.
Right, right. Cocaine is cocaine. It's the delivery method. James, I did want to address a talking point that I hear from the drug czar and from other law enforcement who are opposed to legalization of my specific topic, marijuana. And when they refer to the Mexican cartels, they say, well, you know, these guys aren't Boy Scouts. If we legalize pot, why, they would just traffic harder drugs and do more other crimes. What about this notion that for some reason we keep drugs illegal to, what, I guess give criminals something to do?
Well, there's no markup on any other type of crime like there is a markup on something that grows on a plant. You know, we take marijuana that grows in the ditch. You can't kill it any more than you can prohibit dandelions. You can outlaw dandelions.
I wish they would.
You can outlaw marijuana. But you can't make them go away, which is why Scotch thrives. You know, we try to kill the things. You can't make them go away. So we outlaw and we prosecute these drug things by the gram, but we seize it by the ton. I mean, anybody with an ounce of brains is realizing we're going to go broke trying to do what we've been trying to do.
Yeah.
So and then the crime and the violence in Mexico. I mean, we've got just 46,000 people killed down there since the United States started supporting Philip Calderon's war on drugs, particularly marijuana. The cartels in Mexico produce 60% of their money is coming from marijuana, an innocuous substance less harmful than alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, we've got tremendous amounts of drugs. It's an estimated 21,500 metric tons of marijuana was produced in 2008, according to the U.S. Justice Department Center on Drug Intelligence. And 21,500 500 tons, metric tons. And so we seize a ton or 10 tons. It's absolutely insignificant. And then because of the prohibition and the increased artificial value of marijuana, the largest cash crop in the United States is marijuana. So, I mean, it's just anybody with an ounce of sense of brains is going to realize that we're shooting ourselves in the foot over and over, and we can't pay the bills, and it makes these substances more dangerous instead of controlling and regulating them.
What happens to our law enforcement employment when we do finally come around and come up with sensible drug policies that regulate them? Will we need less cops, or will we keep the same number of cops and just have them actually solve real crimes?
Well, if in fact we have too many, and I know there are many people in Chicago who say we don't have enough, we through attrition, through retirement and so forth, would be able to wean back the numbers. But the problem is, because we're spending so much time on the drug crime, we don't have time to solve homicides. The solve rate on homicides has dramatically tumbled from what it was decades ago. And so we're prioritizing. We've got all these guys sneaking around and trying to do undercover buys and putting on costumes and trying to trap people and catching them before they can flush the stuff down the toilet, and SWAT teams going through the front doors. I mean, it's so un-American. We need to wake up and get off the prohibition kick and start using our head.
All right.
I don't know how much time we have today, but, you know, I want to really mention we've had great news in Chicago today.
Oh, yeah.
I attended a conference, a press conference, and for the first time we've got a city councilman joining county board members saying that we need to start issuing pot tickets instead of arresting people. They came up with numbers, 23,000 people arrested in Chicago for simple pot possession of under 10 grams, and 5,000 in the suburbs for 28,000 people a year being arrested. 90% of those cases result in a dismissal, so nothing happens anyway, but the time that these people are locked up and the police hours and fingerprinting and photographing and taking them off the street and preventing them from solving real crime instead of this two people consensually, one handing the other marijuana in exchange for money and then the other one possessing it. These people have come out and said we need pot tickets in Chicago.
Wow.
An ordinance was already passed applying to unincorporated Cook County. So now Cook County Commissioner John Frischi has joined with Chicago aldermen, including Richard Mell, a well-known name in Chicago politics, and about five other aldermen, calling for the end of small-time marijuana prosecution.
Wow.
And they estimate that the savings would be in the tens of millions of dollars a year. And Chicago, like all major metropolitan areas, have huge problems with the payment of the bills.
Yeah, yeah, that's great news. I'm so glad to hear that. Sounds like, you know, they're following on the heels of this New York Police Department trying to change their ways as far as policing minor marijuana crime. So thank you for bringing that to us. James Gearock, who is a former assistant state's attorney of Cook County and Cook County prosecutor, thank you so much for joining us. And I want to encourage everyone to check out leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com for more info. Glad to have you here, and we hope you come back again sometime.
Thank you very much, Russ.
All right. When we come back, the Ron Paul fans asked for it. We're going to talk about the representative from Texas and his bid for the presidency right after this.
Hey, Tokers and Tokettes. This is Radical Russ from Normal Show Live. We're proud to be the voice of the marijuana nation and proud to have you on our team. Now, you can represent NSL in your own Normal Show Live gear from HandmadeApparel.biz. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel is one of us and a huge supporter of our show. He's designed the classic blockhead line of NSL shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. Worn by Radical Russ, Cannabis Carry, and Ganja John on the show and at live events, the designs feature their iconic logos and the It's Got to Be 420 Somewhere in the World tagline. Proceeds directly benefit Normal Show Live and HandmadeApparel.biz, one of our community's strongest supporters. You can also get your Cannabis Cure UK, Ganja John Show, Irie Island Hour, and more gear from the Normal Network at HandmadeApparel.biz. Visit HandmadeApparel.biz today.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Alternative Medical Choices offers healthcare the way it should be. Easy to access, patient-centered, team-based, and quality-focused. We offer a variety of natural, affordable healthcare treatment options like primary care, group acupuncture, massage, and assistance with OMMP registration. As a patient, you will have a team of experts working with you to make you the best you can be. Call Alternative Medical Choices at 503-288-5579 or check us out on the web at altmedchoices.com.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
All right, I've been going rounds and rounds and rounds with people on Twitter here who have been calling out Normal, specifically one guy named Skeeter on my, who's been calling out Normal. How come Normal doesn't tweet about Ron Paul? How come Normal isn't talking about Ron Paul? You should really talk more about Ron Paul. Ron Paul would legalize marijuana and end the drug war. If Normal doesn't talk about Ron Paul while they're ripping off their customers, they're ripping off their supporters by not talking more about Ron Paul and how he'd end marijuana prohibition because Ron Paul would end the war on drugs, and Normal's not talking about him, and Normal's just a bunch of two-bit lawyers who want to make sure they keep marijuana prohibition intact by not talking about Ron Paul so they can continue to rake in a whole bunch of money defending people on dime bag charges. Okay, so I haven't been talking enough about Ron Paul, huh? Let's talk a little bit about Ron Paul. Now, fair warning, before we get started, Normal and the Normal Foundation, which produce this show, are 501c3 and 501c4 tax-exempt corporations, which means they are not allowed to specifically endorse a particular candidate for office. However, we are allowed to report on candidates and their views. So in that spirit, I would like to tell you a little bit about Representative Ron Paul. Now, indeed, as the Ron Paul supporters have been reminding me, he would legalize all drugs, not just marijuana, but he would also legalize cocaine, meth, and heroin, believing that it is not part of the federal government's overview within the Constitution to be able to prohibit the commerce in plants and drugs. So that is one thing that Ron Paul supporters will often point out to those of us in Normal, is that for the longest time, he has sponsored the end to marijuana prohibition. He sponsored industrial hemp farming acts and medical marijuana truth and trials acts. So Ron Paul, indeed, has been a big friend to the marijuana community. But if you're considering voting for Ron Paul, I think you should know all of Ron Paul's positions, or at least a large number of Ron Paul's positions. For example, Ron Paul would let prostitution be. It would be completely, there'd be no federal laws against prostitution. Now, you may or may not disagree with that, but I think it's fair that you know that that is his position. Another position that Ron Paul holds is that he believes that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are all unconstitutional, and has compared the failure of the federal courts to strike them down to their failure for them to abolish slavery. This is from a visit that he spent on, I believe it was Fox News Sunday back in May, where he was asked, "You talk a lot about the Constitution. You say Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are all unconstitutional." Paul says, "There's no authority in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 doesn't say I can set up an insurance program for the people. That is such an extreme liberal viewpoint that has been mistaught in our schools." The person interviewing him points out that the Supreme Court did decide in 1937 that Social Security was constitutional under the article that says we had Article 1, Section 8 that says promote the general welfare. And Paul said, "The Constitution and the court said slavery was legal too. And we had to reverse that." So there, you know, Ron Paul is comparing the fact that we have Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid as a decision by the courts as abominable as not abolishing slavery through the courts. So that is one of what Ron Paul's positions. Now, I don't know if you are dependent on Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. Ron Paul believes that should be left up to the states, to be fair, that the states should take care of the old, the sick, and the infirm. So I just hope you happen to be in one of those states that can afford to take care of you should you get sick or old. Now, another position of Ron Paul is that about half of the federal cabinet would be abolished. This would include the departments of energy, education, agriculture, commerce, health and human services, homeland security, and labor. So if you believe that any of those federal agencies are not worth us having, for example, you know, Department of Commerce regulating, you know, how these banks can overcharge us and stuff, then, you know, then you might want to consider a vote for Ron Paul. Ron Paul also believes there's no federal reason why the government should be setting policies on abortion, gay marriage, prayer in school, or other social issues. Should be up to the states to decide that. So if you happen to live in one of those states that won't let your daughter get an abortion or forces her to pray to a Christian God in school, then you might consider a vote for Ron Paul. Ron Paul was one of two votes against something called the SAFE Act. Now, the SAFE Act was an act on child porn on the net, illegal images. And it was a 409-2 vote. And basically, the SAFE Act would have required any internet service provider who became aware of a pedophile posting child porn online, they would have to report that to the authorities. Ron Paul didn't think that should be something that ISPs should have to report. Now, to be fair, the act itself was written rather broadly and could also include things like anime and hentai, you know, drawings of child porn kind of stuff. So maybe, you know, if that's something that you might want to, something you ought to look into if you're considering voting for Ron Paul. If Ron Paul had been president this past year, we wouldn't have sent SEAL Team 6 into Pakistan to kill bin Laden. Ron Paul was a very strong proponent of working with the government of Pakistan, figuring we could cooperate with them and they would help us to deal with bin Laden. You know, Pakistan, the country that was holding bin Laden in a secured compound, $20 million compound, that was just blocks away from, what was it, the country's military academy, like West Point of Pakistan. So I'm sure they probably would have, you know, cooperated with us eventually. Also, if you're considering voting for Ron Paul, also understand that he opposes federal antitrust legislation. Now, antitrust legislation, that's where, you know, it prevents monopolies. It prevents one company from owning everything and having no competition. He believes that that can be protected by the concept of the voluntary contract. If we just let businesses be and don't have regulations on them, the invisible hand of the marketplace will make sure that they don't aggregate all their wealth and power into one large company to control that market. They'll just do it out of their own best interest. Also, if you're considering a vote for Ron Paul because he'd legalize marijuana, understand that he wants to abolish the Federal Reserve and would want to revert the United States economy back to a gold standard. That is, having dollars backed up by gold. Now, this is an appealing mentality to people that don't think too deeply into the economic side of things, but understand that a gold standard existed throughout human history up until about the 20th century, right? You know, gold was used as the standard, and history was plagued by series of economic turmoils based on the fact that stuck to a non-fiat currency, banks and governments aren't able to deal with the rapid fluctuations in the market and unemployment. So if you want even bigger boom and bust cycles, you might want to consider a vote for Ron Paul. Another thing that he's got a problem with is the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, you know, that keeps to make sure that we have clean air and clean water and things like that, that it's not really, they should be abolished as well, and feels that if we just let the market decide and enforce private property rights, that's what will eliminate pollution, right? That big company will, you know, send out a bunch of air pollution, and then the other companies will want to punish them for polluting the air, and the market will work it all out. It'll all be fine. Don't worry about it. Ask a chimney sweep in London in the 18th century about that. All right, what else? The Civil Rights Act of 1964. Remember when blacks couldn't sit at the lunch counters with everybody else, right? And the Civil Rights Act of 1964 said businesses had to equally serve people regardless of color or race or anything like that. Yeah, he thought that was a bad idea. A massive, quote, a massive violation of private property and contract, is what he called it. So he feels that businesses really should be free to discriminate. Like if you got a business, you don't like black people, you should be free to have a sign that says no black people allowed to eat at this lunch counter, because eventually business, you know, would be boycotted and people would say, oh, we don't want to eat at that racist lunch counter. And that would have brought it all around. So you should have the freedom to discriminate against black people if you don't like to. Oh, and people in wheelchairs, he doesn't think the ADA, he said, quote, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, should never have been passed, end quote. So if a business doesn't want to make their restrooms handicapped accessible or have parking lots that have the wheelchair ramps to be able to get in, that's fine, because, you know, other businesses will open up to serve the people in wheelchairs, surely, because they're such a huge market. Yeah. And also wants to end the birthright citizenship of the 14th Amendment. Thinks that if you're born in America, that shouldn't make you automatically a citizen. And believes that emergency rooms ought to be able to turn away illegal immigrants. That's right. If the guy picking the onions that goes on your 99-cent burger ends up chopping off a finger and goes to the ER, the hospital ought to be able to turn him away. And he thought a congressional gold medal for Mother Teresa was something we shouldn't give her. There's Ron Paul for you.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
So next time you want to pepper me with insults on Twitter about who I should and shouldn't be talking about, maybe you ought to consider that I was a political talk radio host for a couple of years, and I'm fighting in a league much higher than you are. That's you, Skeeter on me. We'll see you next week. Bye.